Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezevic here with you on this Tuesday morning. And let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on? How are we doing?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you doing this morning?
You're great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Charles, what did you think of that Super Bowl? Matthew Stafford, Cooper Kupp and company get it done, and Aaron Donald closes the door. What did you think of the game, and what do you think this does for Matthew Stafford and his legacy as he moves forward here?
That was a pretty good game. You know, it was, we got spoiled, I think, the last couple of rounds heading into, you know, this one, and maybe a little disappointed that the Bengals weren't able to press the drive a little further, but, you know, at the same time, it showcased what we've come to know about Aaron Donald as, I think, far and away the best defender in the game today, but I also think that historically we can go ahead and start to enter him into the conversation with, you know, Lawrence Taylor and Joe Green and, you know, whoever you consider to be the best defenders in the history of the NFL. I think he's worth Reggie White. You know, I put him there. I kind of thought it was an interesting way to start the day with the whole retirement talk, which we can get to that in a minute. But, you know, he's certainly accomplished more than enough at this point, I think, to be a Hall of Fame caliber player. And that Rams defense came up, especially the second half and then the fourth quarter, it really played out the way the teams were built. We knew what the downside was of the Bengals. We knew the offensive line was capable of undercutting, you know, the kind of game that the Bengals were having up until this point in the second half. And we also knew that the Rams defense was capable of you know, flipping a switch and dominating, which they really did for much of that second half. So it was it played out to the strengths and weaknesses of the teams. And I think now we'll have a good debate whether Matthew Stafford's a Hall of Famer, and, you know, seeing whether these two teams can keep their respective rosters together, because they're both going to have some work to do in the offseason.
Well, don't tease us. You say we'll get to in a minute. I'm expecting you to break some news on Aaron Donald's playing status, you know, moving forward. So actually let me give you a combo question. What do you think happens there? And where do you think, we've talked a lot about the Stafford thing, a lot of yelling and screaming about Stafford on either side of where he sits now. So on both of those topics, where are you?
Well, with Donald, let's sit and think about what makes sense here. Okay. You're talking about a defender who, you know, is at his peak at 31 years old, still has, you know, I would think several more years of prime left in front of him. Yes, he's accomplished everything he could up until this point, particularly capping it with a ring. But afterward, none of his teammates were like sitting there wistfully talking about Aaron Donald as if this was any kind of a send-off whatsoever. No one was taking it seriously. The head coach wasn't taking it seriously. The general manager wasn't taking it seriously. And I think if you sat back and look at this and said, okay, why all of a sudden now does this just happen before the Super Bowl? Rodney Harrison comes out and says this. Afterward, Aaron Donald's being extremely vague, where he's just like, oh, I'm just being in the moment. He's 31. He's got 3 years left on a contract that is aged very poorly. He's the fifth highest paid defender in the NFL right now, and he should be the highest paid defender probably by a good 20%, okay? Like, he is a $30 million defender right now in the NFL who's making $22 million at a time where the salary cap is going to take these big leaps the next couple of years. Well, he's also locked into, like I said, a deal that's not so great. It's not a market deal right now for the next 3 years. So what is he going to do? Is he going to sit there and go, okay, I'll go ahead and be the fifth highest paid defender, and then by the end of this deal, if I play it out, I'll probably be outside of the top 12 by the time we're done here. And, No, I mean, it's completely ridiculous. His deal needs to be addressed. It needs to be reworked and brought back to what we would think of, let's say, a quarterback, okay? Any quarterback is sitting there who's far and away the best quarterback in the NFL. He's not going to sit there and go, yeah, I'll, unless it's Tom Brady, but Brady was the absolute outlier of the NFL. He's not going to sit there and just be like, yeah, sure, I'll go ahead and fall far behind the pack at a time where I'm going to basically have the next 3 years to make max level money. Because at 34, if he enters free agency at 34, it's not going to be how it is for him right now. And I think he wants, I think part of this is just getting that contract addressed. And before we get to Stafford, the same thing with McVay, by the way. 36, is Sean McVay going to retire? No, he's not. Okay, Sean McVay's not going to retire. He just won his first Super Bowl. Von Miller made a really good point after the game where he said, this is addictive. When you win a Super Bowl, then you start to think about, okay, how do I get this next one? Like, I love this feeling. This is amazing. This is the payoff. And he kind of focused some things through that lens. I just don't see McVay going anywhere unless the TV money was absurd. He has also earned a market deal as a head coach, which means put him up there with Belichick and what Peyton was making and all these other coaches that are $12, $13, $14, $15 million a year. That's, you know, a heck of a lot more than I think, you know, Sean's making $8.5 million now. So right now we're already kind of seeing some of the business decisions that are going to be made moving forward by the Rams. Stafford, I don't know, whatever your argument is, I guarantee I'm somewhere lost in the sauce on that. I think to me it focuses the previous 12 years of his career in terms of what could have been if he was on a competent franchise that was all in on winning a Super Bowl every year. I think he's a Super Bowl quarterback, but it seems like every time I bring that up, somebody wants to argue, or excuse me, not a Super Bowl Hall of Fame quarterback, somebody wants to argue about it. Thankfully, we still have what should be another 3 or 4 years of you know, his prime window to continue looking at him under this microscope.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Charles, you had an interesting piece over the weekend, kind of talking about social media in today's NFL landscape and players like Joe Burrow and TJ Watt. And, you know, AJ Brown did it here for a little while as well, that just kind of detoxed and got away from it. What did you learn during that process? And what do you think about maybe, you know, today's NFL player doing that more often? Do you think that could be something that we start to see more of as the years coming or coming up here in the next few years?
Yeah, it was interesting because Watt had just won the Defensive Player of the Year, and I had talked to him that morning. And, you know, one of the things that he talked about when he was sort of promoting, you know, the fitness regimen he was on and the supplement regimen and everything, that part of it was, you know, it being brought to his attention that, hey, maybe you need to look at how much time you're engaging on social media or with your phone or whatever, because that now is becoming a bigger part of players who are sitting here go, I can train to be fast. I can train to be strong. Maybe it's time for me to start thinking about what's impacting me mentally. And he said something interesting. He said, knowing honestly how social media affects you. Are you affected by people patting you on the back? Are you affected by people ripping you? If you are, take that into account and react accordingly. Don't pretend you're something that you're not. And so he just talked about, you know, he went through this detox where it wasn't like a total detox. So, for example, Joe Burrow, what I brought up was that Joe Burrow said in July, hey, I'm getting off and we'll see. And so for Twitter, he did. He got off for the totality of the season. His Instagram, you know, there's a post here and there, but he was very much largely off. Like, I think Brady had more in 1 month than Burrow did over the course of the entire season in terms of Instagram. And it was the same thing. It was just players didn't want distractions. And Watt said, this is kind of funny, he was like, I don't need a guy to tell me I had a bad game. He's like, I know I had a bad game. and he knows it affects him. Like, he talked about going home and he would, you know, all of a sudden he would be buried in his phone for the next couple of hours and he would be asking himself kind of why, you know, why did I do that and how healthy is this? And I think more athletes are starting to take that into account. You know, Baker Mayfield's now getting off for a while, but you saw with the Chiefs, Tyrann Mathieu, a couple of players got into it with Chiefs fans, talked about him being the toxic fan base. And it's definitely something that I think athletes are becoming cognizant of, and in particular when they're sitting there in the offseason saying, look, I'm setting all these goals for myself physically. Maybe I need to start doing this mentally as well, because there are certain times where I'm getting buried into things where I shouldn't be, with, you know, social media, or, you know, arguing with people, or just letting headlines get into my head.
Yeah, no, it's a great piece, and frankly, every fan base is toxic if you're going to evaluate based on Twitter. So,
that's the funny thing. I kind of said to him, I laughed. I was like, we've all done it. And when I was at the Super Bowl, I see J.C. Treader, who's obviously the Brown center, and he's the president of the union. And we see each other, and he kind of laughs, and he says, hey, it's nice to finally meet in person. We're laughing because the reason why he said that was, the way I know J.C. Treader is we got into it with each other on Twitter and got into this, like, argument in front of, like, everybody on Twitter. And that was how we met each other, by arguing with each other on social media. And we just sort of laughed about how stupid it was, and, you know, just – but that's kind of an example of it. You end up in this forum where you're fighting with each other, you're fighting with, you know, people who are reading or people who are disagreeing with you, and it does end up, like, affecting you mentally. And there are players who – I've fought with Tyrann Mathieu, Maurice Hurt. I mean, I literally have, like, a list of 30 guys, and what's the point, you know? And – I think some athletes are starting to see that, where they're like, I'm engaging in things that all it does is take energy out of my head, and it really serves no purpose other than entertaining people for free on a platform that really I don't care about entertaining people on.
Charles, what do you think the Colts are going to do at quarterback? Obviously, you know, Mortensen had the thing about, you know, about Wentz. Irsay has done everything but saying he can't stand Carson Wentz and never wants to see him again every chance he gets to talk. Where do you think that's going?
I would put them in the list of surveying teams, but the problem is I just don't know, you know, what's going to happen with Deshaun Watson. You know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers supposedly are sitting here, you know, kicking around the idea that, hey, if Tom is sure he's not coming back, maybe we need to check in on Deshaun Watson. You know, the Saints, it's another team that is in salary cap hell, and yet they want to somehow potentially address quarterback. There's just so many teams that I don't know if there's an easy answer to that, particularly if Aaron Rodgers says, hey, you know, I'm going to stick it out at Green Bay, and they're going to, you know, maximize everything they can in terms of keeping him, and they're going to do all these extensions and put in voidable years and, you know, try to keep as much of the Packers together. Then you have a Denver Broncos team sitting there going, we still really need a quarterback. Pittsburgh needs a quarterback. I know they'd love to get rid of him. I just don't know that the options are really all that enticing. And unless you're going to just give up, you know, start with three first round picks for a Russell Wilson, or kind of get over the hurdles you need to with Deshaun Watson, I don't know if it's going to be easy for them to address. It feels like everybody's a year out from sort of finishing off that quarterback need. And I'm telling you, this draft, I don't know if it's true or not, but I've had more than one front office executive suggest to me that now looking at the quarterbacks really closely, they're not sure that there's a bona fide long-term 10-year NFL starter in this entire class, which is crazy to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock. Charles, really appreciate you, man. Thanks for taking time to be with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. Talk soon.
Hold on, Charles. Hold on. I got to know. Did you get funky on press row during halftime? Did you kick it old school like back in the day in East Lansing?
Oh, boy.
I mean, I enjoyed it. I did. I enjoyed the halftime show. But I was also like, it clearly showcased how many old people there. Like, now my hair is definitely old because I'm like, everyone in here knows the words. Everyone in here is like, I'm like, yeah, it's official. We're definitely, all these people we're watching are old, and we're definitely old. And We've made it, Joe. We've
That's
finally
right.
hit the era where we can sing along with the entire halftime show because it was during the most formative years of our lives.
That's right. And and let's not forget that you have been called in certain circles Vanilla Shake. So, you know.
Let's not go too far back into the past. I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Charles, appreciate you, brother.
All right, later, guys.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest. We'll come back. We'll react to what Charles had to say there. Welcome more of your thoughts in our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds fans, join us for Smashville Live tomorrow night on 102.5 The Game with special guests Preds forwards Matt Duchesne and Luke Cunnan. The show will be hosted by Max Herz and Chris Mason. The show airs on Wednesdays during the Preds season from 6 to 7 p.m., featuring Preds players, former players, and other special guests. You can watch the show online via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Facebook page, YouTube, and Twitter. So be sure to join us this hockey season for Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine. In Bellevue. Speaking of the Nashville Predators, it is a game day for the Predators. We'll have Chris Mason coming up here in about 10 minutes to talk all things Preds. 102.5 The Game, Preds game day broadcast, brought to you by Hermitage Design Center, the professional source for lighting, hardware, appliance, custom kitchens and baths on the web at GoHermitage.com. Thanks to Charles Robinson for joining us in the last segment. It is kind of amazing, and I had seen this the other day when the Aaron Donald retirement buzz started. The fact that he is like the fifth highest paid defensive player in the league, it's pretty unbelievable. And when you hear Charles talk about it in the last segment, doesn't sound like Charles believes much of it is much consideration to actually retiring. It's about the contract, which if you're Aaron Donald, I think makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I don't blame him. If that's all this is, hey, Rodney, you throw that out there, man, because, you know, got to give the Rams a little nudge. Then hard to blame him. And for anybody out there saying, well, you signed a contract. Well, guess what? In this league, when you get cut at a moment's notice, if you're performing at a certain level and a contract has aged, you know, poorly, which they can, obviously, if a long enough contract and your performance is that elite, you got every right to expect your club to reward you. And the Rams should absolutely do so. Whatever they need to figure that out, they should do it. Because as soon as he's not on their team, they have a completely different outlook.
Yep. I don't think there's any question about it. So going back to the Stafford debate, and Michelle sent this in our group text, and it's an interesting discussion. There's a lot of talk right now about, well, hey, if Matthew Stafford is going to be in the NFL Hall of, or the Pro Football Hall of Fame one day, well, then Matt Ryan should be as well. And if you look at some of their numbers side by side, you know, Matt Ryan's got a better record at 120 and 102. Matt Ryan also has an NFL MVP attached to his name as well. He's thrown for 10,000 more yards. He's thrown for 367 touchdowns, four Pro Bowls, all these different things. Now, I will say Matt Ryan is also older, so you have to keep that part in the back of your mind as well. But what do you think of that idea? Number one, do you think Matt Ryan is a Hall of Famer? And what do you think of this discussion now between these two players? Because I think it's a good one. Both guys have been really, really good. Maybe 1 or 2 years, Matt Ryan has been considered a top five quarterback. Really not much other than that. At least I don't think. Maybe you disagree with me there, but what do you think of the Matt Ryan, Matthew Stafford comparison?
Yeah. I mean, I'd say again, like before this, even just the last postseason, I'd say there's no comparison. You know, Matt Ryan has an overall stronger resume. It is. But the one thing that it's hard to quantify is just the difference in actually finishing the deal and winning that game.
Yep.
And also, by the way, doing it because of things you did. I understand that Matt Stafford wasn't the MVP of the Super Bowl, but I mean, the Rams don't win Super Bowl without some huge plays he made. And some huge plays he made basically with one offensive weapon still at his disposal. And of course, Matt Ryan, 28-3. It's not Matt Ryan's fault that Kyle Shanahan can't count. and didn't just run the football, the comeback would not have happened if not for some horrific decisions by Kyle Shanahan.
Brady's on the other side. The Pharaoh, you know, he's casting some spells over there. He's fine.
It must have been that. But, I mean, Matt Ryan was incredible that year. And really, he was great in that game as they were on their way to a blowout. Right now, if you force me to guess, you know, pass, fail, yes, no, I'm going to guess that both of those guys end up in Canton. And that's where we, again, come back to the Richard Sherman rant or whoever, like participation trophy, blah, blah, blah. Okay. The Hall of Fame is not confined to the absolute top sliver of players in the league. Maybe you think it should be, but that's not what it is, and it's not going to be. So Matt Stafford has, I think, more work to do. If he ends up kind of within range of Matt Ryan, let's say, because I think Matt Ryan is closer to his finish. He's a couple years, he's been in the league a couple years longer. I think he's closer to his finish. If Matt Stafford ends up right in the same range or ahead of him statistically, doesn't have the MVP in a season, won't have as many Pro Bowls, but will that Super Bowl win make the difference?
Oh,
I don't know. I don't know.
Do you think Matt Ryan's a lock to get in? Because, I mean, he doesn't have the Super Bowl. I think there's a decent chance he doesn't get in there.
I don't think he's a lock. He's also not done. So, talking about 65,000-70,000 yards. Again, I understand that too. Okay, great. Well, in this era, guys throw for 4,000 and 5,000 yards all the time. It used to be that 3,000 yards was a heck of an achievement.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a lot, but I'm going to guess that he does.
Gator Tim on the text line says Stafford's stats will surpass Ryan's. Also, writers think that winning a Super Bowl is somehow only a quarterback thing. Too much Hall of Fame credit for Super Bowl wins. This is coming from Gator Tim on the text line.
Well, I mean, look, you may be right there, but I would also argue that, like, and this is why I think Stafford has completely reset the conversation on him. I mean, what is more important than all this pressure? It's kind of like an Olympic athlete. Olympics going on now. You think about that stuff. You think about decades in some cases, certainly years of preparation for one moment. Like, that's why, to me, gymnastics athletes are the greatest athletes, period. Simone Biles is the greatest athlete of all time in the history of this planet, because not only because she does things that, like, you know, a handful of other humans, or maybe no other humans, could ever do, actually, but because it is purely you on that stage. All your life has been preparation. Now be perfect, doing things that most humans wouldn't even try to do, or they kill themselves. So I'm taking that to this: when you perform in the absolute highest pressure moment that you spend your entire life trying to win a Super Bowl, it's all we talk about. Everybody watches the Super Bowl. People who don't care about sports, and when you come through with those plays, it means more. Okay, it means a lot more. And so maybe you're right that there's too much emphasis on it, but at the same time, I mean, what's more important? Like, what's a better test of a player's mettle than their performance in those moments when they can actually get to that stage? Some don't get to that stage and are still great players, but when you can get yourself there and then you make those plays, God, it counts for so much more.
I hear you, and I agree with you largely to an extent. I have heard the argument of, like, if McNair wins a Super Bowl, he's probably a Hall of Famer. And part of me is like, okay, well, did you see the last drive of the Super Bowl? Like, what more do you really want him to do? Like, if Kevin Dyson
he performed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, is that the difference between McNair being a Hall of Famer and not a Hall of Famer? I don't know. Like, the numbers, I mean, quite frankly, the numbers that McNair put up and the numbers we're talking about with Ryan and Stafford are not comparable. So, they're very different, and it's a different thing. So I get that. But to me, it's not always, did this guy win a championship and did he not? Like, in terms of judging the performance in the championship, if that makes any sense.
No, I agree. I mean, I think McNair's performance in that Super Bowl was incredible. What he did in the second half, that's Hall of Fame stuff, you know?
Yeah.
If there was a broken tackle and they went in overtime, and, you know, that means he's making more plays, by the way.
Yeah.
Does that make the difference? It seems crazy that it would, but he'd have a better chance. I believe that.
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's any question. When we come back, we'll be joined by Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst. We'll get his thoughts on the Preds and the Capitals coming up tonight at Bridgestone Arena. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it is that time of the week here on Robbie and Rex Road. Time to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in the great Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, former Nashville Predators goaltender. C-Mace, what's going on, my man? How are we doing?
Wow, we're doing great, buddy. Just pulling up to the rink, getting ready to do the pregame meeting, but beautiful day, beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day in Nashville, Tennessee, no doubt about it. Chris Mason brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. So, C-Mace, obviously, the theme right now for the Predators is the penalties. And John Hines spent a lot of time talking about that the other night after the game against Winnipeg. From your vantage point, just being a player in a locker room and knowing that, obviously, they've talked about this, they've looked at video on this, they've done a lot of different things to address it. What's the challenge like from talking about it, showing it, and then going out on the ice and trying to do it and limit the penalties? Because the Predators have had a hard time with that so far.
Yeah, they have. And, you know, honestly, I'm trying to really dissect this and figure out why this is happening. And I think a little bit is because of the offensive success they're having, I think they're pushing a little more offensively, and they're kind of, you know, not as defensive as they should be or as this team wants to be. So they're kind of just out of position. They're not reloading back to the middle of the ice, so they get in these, you know, kind of reaching positions where it's a reactionary thing instead of, you know, being in the right spots where you have body position and you don't need to reach all the time. And it's just bad habits right now. And it's you can see the guys as soon as they take it, because the reaction, you know, of Roman Josi or some of the guys that are taking these stick infractions, they know. They just have to find a way to get this out of their game, because that's the way they should be beating teams. Is you dominate 5-on-5, you don't give them anything, your power play is good, you win the game on the power play. Instead, they're playing good 5-on-5, they're taking too many penalties, they're putting the other team on the power play, and they're losing. The Preds are losing because they're killing too much. So these are valuable points, as we all know. Second half's going to get tougher. It's going to be harder to score goals, so that discipline and that defensive structure and style of play that they want to play with is going to be paramount going down the stretch, because the margin for error gets smaller and smaller as the season goes on and teams are fighting. You saw how desperate Winnipeg and Dallas was. You know, Washington's a good team. Geez, don't put them on the power play and it's game over. So this, in a way, I guess you could take the, if you want to be the optimist, that this is a blessing, and if you use it properly, it's hurt them a big time in the last two games, the direct result of why they lost. And then you're going up against a team that has a power play like Washington. I mean, if you're not going to correct it now, then you got some work to do.
Well, and C-Mace, obviously, it's, you know, like you said, the last two games, it's really illustrated clearly for everybody how costly it is when you directly then, you know, give up the power play goals. But what about what's the diminishing effect too, just on your overall game when you're in the box that much?
Well, you know, it sucks for, you know, Duchesne and Forsberg, because you get in the penalty box, they got to get them out there, change up the lines depending on who's, you know, killing the penalty, just to get them out there after the penalty. And then, you know, then you take another penalty, then they go back and sit on the bench. It's tough to get the flow and the momentum and to build anything when you're constantly going back to the box. And then, you know, depending on who goes, you know, Borowiecki got a game misconduct, so now Roman's got to kill penalties, and you don't want him out there blocking shots and being in that situation. And the guys that are out there, you know, it's hard minutes, stop, start, block a shot, stop, start, you know, you can get hemmed in your own end, get off the ice, and then it's tough to recover physically as well for the guys that do kill penalties, and you don't have as much in the tank, you know, in the third period or in the last 10 minutes when you need it the most. So, and then, you know, on top of that, you're taxing your goaltender. Even if you don't give up a lot of shots on the penalty kill, you're still, as a goaltender, you're crouched, your hard pushes laterally, stop, down, up, down, up, down. It just really zaps your energy, anyone that's on the penalty kill. So it's just not in the recipe for success. It's the exact opposite. And I feel like we're starting to see it hurt them. I feel like they might have got away with it a little too frequently before, because they would get the goals, they would get the saves from Saros, and they would, you know, they would get out of it. Guys did a good job on the penalty kill, but even if you have a good percentage on your penalty kill, you go to the box six times, you can get out of that game with a good percentage, but you're going to lose because you gave up a couple. So it's just not, it can't happen. They've got to find a way to curb it.
Chris Mason on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. See, Mason, I'm interested for your thoughts on this, because I look at this Predators team right now, and I like a lot of what they're doing 5-on-5, like you said. I still look at Johansson's line and think to myself, if they could find a winger to play with him that could be consistent putting the puck in the back of the net, then maybe that could take this team to a new level as well. And, you know, whether that comes via trade deadline or internally, I don't know. I guess internally, whether it's Tolvanen or Tomasino, or maybe moving Janot around like a couple of people have suggested, what are some ideas that you have maybe for some more consistent production on the wing alongside Ryan Johansson, who, as we know, has played pretty well regardless of who he's been with so far this year?
Yeah, he's had such a great season, and we all often have found ourselves talking about Duchesne and Forsberg, rightfully so, but Ryan Johansson has had a lot to deal with in terms of line mates. He's had, you know, every time there's some sort of shift, it seems he's getting his wingers moved around. I think he's got a good thing going with Cousins and Cunning, but I agree with you. I think that's the spot where if you want that dual threat, those two lines that can score consistently, I think, you know, if you do shuffle it around internally, a couple of guys you mentioned, Tolvanen's the guy. He's the guy to me his next step in his, you know, career. Pass is to be that he's got to be that top six guy. He's still a young player. Maybe he's not ready for that consistently. So you got to find someone. Can you try Janot? Yeah, Janot's been great up there. He's played well with Johansson. He can score. He's got that physicality. He can hang. He can skate well enough. But is he the long-term solution this season? He can do it for a few weeks, but we don't know that. So to me, that's something I think as a deadline move, if the team is still in a good spot, we're only just over a month away from the trade deadline. There's still a lot of games, 13, 14, whatever it is. So that's something that I think if this team feels that they're a team that could make some noise and really upset some people in the playoffs, which I think they could personally, a top six guy is something that I would really seriously look at. There's players like Cali Yarncroke's out there. I don't know. Is he your prototypical top six, player that you want? Well, I don't know, but he can do the job. You can put him anywhere. But there's other guys out there as well, and a lot of teams dealing with salary cap issues. So you could potentially get a bargain top six guy. It's got to be the right guy, though.
Chris, how should Peter Laviolette be remembered, regarded, and greeted tonight by Predators fans?
I think, I really feel that his time here, he took this organization to a different plane, to a different set of expectations for its fan base, for the team internally. I really feel that it was such a huge part of the growth of this franchise. What he did, the way that, he prepared his players and he changed their mindset into, I'm not saying they didn't have this before under Barry Trotz, but it's just, the evolution of, the mindset of a expansion team franchise and the way it goes. And I think he really got it to the point where he started seriously, wanting and believing that there's a chance that you could win a championship. This team under him, they believe they can win a championship. They believe they can win a Stanley Cup final. They went to the final, and now I think this team in this town believes that they have a team in this city that will one day win a Stanley Cup championship. And I feel that was a large part because of the way Peter Laviolette came in here and the mindset. He's obviously a great motivator, his preparation and all those things. But I think the changing that part of the culture into just, having a good, hardworking team and we're going to score some goals and maybe we'll make some noise in the playoffs. Did well in the regular season. You never know. Maybe won the Stanley Cup to a team that says, you know what? We can win the Stanley Cup. We made it to the finals. We can do this. We're here. And I think it was such a huge part. You know, that's a big, big act to follow after Barry Trotz, and I thought he did an amazing job.
See, Mace, we appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. Have fun calling the game tonight, and we'll talk to you down the road, my friend.
Okay, awesome. Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Absolutely. Buddy. Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Coleman Tractor, Middle Tennessee's leading Kubota dealer. We'll come back. We'll get to more of your thoughts on our text line. Look ahead to the Preds and Capitals coming up tonight at Bridgestone Arena as well. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you. Thanks to Chris Mason for joining us in the last segment. Joe, I think this is a pretty crucial game for the Predators tonight. You've got a stretch this next week or so that's just rough in terms of the quality opponent that you're going to be facing. I feel like you've let two games get away from you in the last couple of games, and penalties have been directly responsible for your losses. Tonight, I'm interested to see how the Predators respond. Number one, can they stay out of the box? And number two, you know, can they sustain things offensively and keep going? I think they've started the last two games really well offensively with the way that they want to play. And then penalties have just totally taken them out of their rhythm. This is an important game in my eyes tonight for the Predators. They need to find a way to win this one.
Some will laugh at this, and this may be a little hot takey, but like you look at the schedule ahead, and like 10 days from now, like, you know, they could be going into, you know, into the Nissan game. And people say, maybe they need to sell. I mean, yeah. I'm not saying they'll actually be in that position internally, but this schedule is brutal. You know, this is obviously a very good team. I mean, it's been great for the Preds. I'm sure they love not being in the division this year with Carolina and Florida, but now they get to like revisit those 1 year rivalries, and those teams are both absolutely playing great hockey. Dallas has life. And then, of course, the Lightning. I mean, this is a huge stretch for this team. And to me, you need to make sure you get this one tonight. You need to make sure you get the Dallas game next week at home. And then you're fine. But you mess around and, you know, lose these games against good teams, and all of a sudden, you know, it's a little bit different look of this team and its standing.
Yeah, man, you got to find a way to get some points. Now, the good news is, well, we'll see what happens on this front, because I'm putting the cart before the horse before I even say this. But Dallas plays Colorado tonight, so hopefully you can get a little help. Like, at this point, there's this, you know, this thought out there from
let somebody, Colorado go.
Well, just let them go, man. Like, yeah. Like they're going to win the division. They got a 12-point lead on you at this point with two games in hand, and apparently they don't plan on losing in regulation anytime soon. So, like, this idea that you're going to win the division, I know it's not technically over, but you're like, nobody's catching Colorado. It's just not going to happen. So from now on, if I'm a Predators fan, when they're not playing the Predators, I'm a big Colorado Avalanche fan. Just beat every other team and beat them in regulation. That's all we ask for.
Well, and not only that, go ahead and just have a ridiculous year, win the President's Trophy, and come into the playoffs as ripe for a huge upset as possible, you know. Yep. Like last year, seriously, not even when they're playing other division foes that could help you, root for them all the time. Have them just have an unbelievable season, because now the pressure just goes up, and then you know, the talk of course will be about like a generational team and blah blah blah, and boy, we know how that can go in the postseason for teams like that sometimes.
Yeah. Minnesota, they're now 3 points up on the Predators. They played one game last night, so now with four games in hand, they scored 7 on the mighty Detroit Red Wings last night. 7. Not a good showing for the Red Wings defensively last night, Joe Rexrode. The winged wheel struggling a little bit.
A little more like the dead things, huh?
Yeah. Yes, they were last night. So big stretch for the Predators. That starts tonight. We'll see what their response is. Like, if we get in here tomorrow morning and we're talking about the Predators taking like six penalties in this game, to me, that's going to be highly disappointing. Like, I know John Hines has talked about this for weeks now. Like, this is not some new issue that has cropped up with the Predators, but at some point, you gotta. There's got to be a conscious effort to. I don't care what we're doing out here. We're not taking penalties. Like, we are not going to do it. Not taking penalties. So we'll see if the Predators can do that tonight.
Yeah, of course, we could also be talking about like a one penalty game where they don't hit anyone and lose 6-2. So
there's that.
You still gotta be a heavy team that likes to get after people and make them pay. And you've just gotta. Really focus on not taking those silly ones.
Well, you know, the Capitals power play sucks apparently, so maybe they should just put them on there. Just let them go. Let Peter Laviolette run that system and let them go on the power play. Why not?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. So we had C-Mace on, and I mean, like, he was saying, like, you don't want to let that team get on the power play. And that's exactly what I would think too. Like, I mean, I still believe that. Like, there's no way with their personnel that you want that. I really can't believe that they're that bad in the power play. It doesn't make any sense.
It does not make any sense whatsoever. Hey, speaking of Predators, Nashville Hockey is coming to Music City for the NHL Stadium Series game. And to celebrate, FanDuel Sportsbook giving all customers a $10 bonus when you bet at least $20 on any NHL game from February 15th through the 18th. Plus, you'll be automatically entered to win two free tickets to the Stadium Series game. Don't miss your chance to watch the Preds take on the Tampa Bay Lightning at the first ever outdoor NHL game in Tennessee. You can enter today by betting at least $20 on any eligible NHL game, like the Preds taking on the Capitals tonight or the Predators and Hurricanes coming up on February 18th. I think the Preds are going to get it done tonight. Give me the Predators on the puck line, but you take it any way you want to take it. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app, sign up using promo code Rob. FanDuel Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. You must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. A max bonus of $10. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Joe Rexroad, before we get out of here, who wins tonight? The Tennessee Vols or the Kentucky Wildcats? Who are you taking?
I think Michelle Perry is wearing orange tomorrow.
Joe! Joe, you are a Tennessee homer.
GB Joe. I am a college basketball, home atmosphere, big game, late game believer.
Listen, it's big for Tennessee, not for Kentucky.
Yeah, apparently not.
Well, if that's how they look at it, Michelle Perry, then your team is about to get smoked.
We'll see.
Look, Kentucky is a better team. I love this Kentucky team. I think it has a chance to – I think it's got a real chance to give Cal natty number two. But I like how the Vols are playing outside of about 5 or 6 minutes in a given game. And if they can clean that up, that place is going to be rocking tonight. When TBA wants to rock, TBA can rock, and it will rock tonight. And I'm going to go with the home team, but I am also here for Robbie wearing a nice Kentucky blue hat tomorrow. I mean, that would be kind of funny.
I mean, the blue would bring out my eyes. And as we know, we're a viewing pleasure on this show is off the charts. So anything I can do to help that, I guess I'm here for.
Yeah, do we really want to get sexier? I don't know. I mean, let's take it easy on people. Let's let them focus on their daily, you know, tasks rather than be preoccupied with our sexiness. But Michelle with orange sweatshirt with the red hair, you know, that could be cool. If that's the case, you got to get on camera tomorrow, Michelle.
No, I will literally look like a pumpkin. My hair is orange. I have a spray tan, so my skin is orange, and I will be wearing – well, I'm not wearing an orange shirt because we're all going to be wearing Kentucky blue tomorrow. Joe, I'll bring you a hat, too.
Okay. I'm not a part of this. I already have to wash your car. Now, I already have to wash your car. I'm not wearing anything. I'm gonna wear – maybe I'll find an old Lions jersey to wear.
Ugh. The good stuff. We'll see what happens. We'll have a Preds game to recap in the morning, and we'll see who the winner is between Robbie Stanley and Michelle Knezovic in the Kentucky-Tennessee matchup later tonight. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Darren Donica Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.